You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Locked On Pacers podcast. I promise you we'll talk about all the games tomorrow. We'll talk about Edmund Sumner's ginormous rise out of nowhere. We'll talk about all the end of the roster guys, the starters, everybody after this Cavs game tomorrow. But today, we're going to talk about that Cavs game in a lot of detail and talk about the Cavs specifically since they're in the division. So we have a nice Locked On crossover episode with Locked On Cavs and Locked On Pacers. Chris Manning is a great host over of Locked On Cavs. So a lot of Cavs talk at the beginning of this one, Pacers talk at the end. Let's just jump right in and get to it. What's up, everybody? It's the first crossover pod of the year. We have Locked On Pacers and Locked On Cavs here together. As always, I'm Tony East, one of the hosts of Locked On Pacers, and I write for the West Indianapolis Community News and at 8.9 Seconds. And on the other line, we have the Locked On Cavs host, Chris Manning. Chris, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. It's good to be talking about some Cavs Pacers actually again, and it's very different from the last time we talked in the playoffs. Like, it feels like a year ago, but it's really only a couple months ago.
It's crazy how fast the offseason went by this summer. It just felt like there was always something going on in the news cycle this time. And all the gaps were filled by Jokic, so the time just went flying by.
Yeah, it really did go by fast. And just, I mean, the state of this division that these two teams are in has really changed as a result of one guy leaving. But like it feels like a very kind of interesting time for the Pacers, where the Cavs sort of like, I think, in a way, would like really be very happy to emulate what success Indiana had last year. I'm skeptical of that can happen, but I think that's sort of like the template they're hoping for, just kind of an interesting role reversal.
Yeah, we can talk Cavs first, but I want to lob this up to your listeners a little bit here. I don't know how much they know this, but the Pacers are literally changing the way they play now that LeBron is out of the conference. Like, McMillan has talked all summer about how they anticipate more teams in the East running two big man lineups. And the Pacers are therefore also going to be running more two big man lineups to counter that. Just because LeBron left the conference, they think that's going to happen. I don't know if I agree with that assessment, but the coaches obviously know more than me. So it's just interesting to see how his impact is already being felt as he's gone.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, let's save that. Let's have you grill me about the Cavs, and we'll come back to that, because that will lead into some questions I have about lineups and things about this Pacers team.
Yep.
But yeah, let's have you grill me, because I feel like I feel like of these two teams, and I am biased because like I sort of like think about this team a lot more. I think the Cavs are just way more like, I have no idea. I feel like I have a good-ish grasp on what I'm expecting out of the Pacers. The Cavs, I just don't know. And I'm curious to see what other people kind of think about this team.
Yeah, well, I'll do my background thoughts on the Cavs and then lob you questions about the Cavs, if that is a good order.
That works for me.
So from my outside perspective, and this requires a tangent first, I think that playing with LeBron is a skill. Kyrie had it. Isaiah Thomas didn't. That's a big reason that trade didn't work. And I think a lot of the Cavs that remain after he left have the skill of not being as good with LeBron, but they're better in a team sense. Like Rodney Hood obviously was better in Utah, but then playing with LeBron, he couldn't really do it, just to name one. And I really think that they have talented players. So I think that they could be, a 500-ish team, just given that. However, I understand why. None of them have played in the roles they're about to play for a decent amount of time, that it could be challenging. And this is my question to you to follow it up, is I don't know who their second best player is after Kevin Love, and I don't know how – I don't think it's good that I don't know that. Who do you think their second best player is?
I don't know, which is bad. Look, I'll say this. I think Kevin Love is clearly the number one, and I think – if you're starting the season at like who is actually the second best player right now, you probably have to say George Hill, right? Because he's the veteran. He's got a track record for a long time, as Pacers fans know, of being a very good NBA point guard, being dependable, good defender, all these things. That tells you sort of where the Cavs are at. And I think ideally what they would hope, I think there is a case for a healthy Tristan Thompson being that number two guy, which is a weird case, I guess, but if you're the Cavs, I think your hope is that Kevin Love remains your number one. But if it's Jetty Osman, if it's Colin Sexton, if it's Larry Nance Jr., if it's Rodney Hood, you want one of those four guys to leap into that number two position. And then you want, I think, that multiple little guys to sort of hop ahead. Now, if I was going to say who I think will be there at the end of the season, I think Sexton and Osman will be the biggest leapers and potentially rise to number two, with Sexton having, I think, the higher upside, Osman sort of being a little bit more developed at this point. Then I would say Nance, because I sort of think we know what he is, but if he does, if he's able to shoot or expand his game at all, it'll make a big difference. And then I would go last Hood, because I'm just not a huge believer in him. But I think right now it's George Hill, and that's not great, but I also think the Cavs have to know that that hopefully will change over the course of the season, because you want to get these young guys developed, and those guys are your key. I mean, I think as much as they have a lot of good veterans on this team to some degree, and guys that have at least been around that can help this transition period, this team is going to be made or broken by their young guys and what kind of development these guys, young guys show in either their second year or their first year. In Rodney Hood's case, the biggest year of his career in terms of being set up for a new contract next summer. And for Larry Nance, like really establishing himself as a centerpiece for the team moving forward. That to me is just where it is. It's George Hill right now, and that's like not great, but for the Cavs, they have to hope that changes.
Yeah, and part of that change to me is why I think they have such a big variance in everybody's mind, is because there's so much in flux. I feel like the Cavs are probably the most likely team in the NBA to make a trade this season, just because they have a bajillion guards. And I don't know who that's going to be, but if I had to guess, it would be George Hill. That could be an ill-advised guess, but anyway. I also think because, like you said, they're counting a lot, not counting on, that's not the right word. They are investing in the future and player development more this year. And if those guys are good, then they're going to be a good team. That also gives them a low, like a low floor potentially. You know, if all of them don't work out, that's not good. I mean, I'm seeing in their second preseason game, obviously it's a preseason game, but they started an all younger dudes lineup: Sexton, Hood, Decker, Osman, and Nance. And I saw Decker put Jason Tatum on the floor, which was pretty interesting. but I like that. You know, that I think that's why I feel like they have so much variance. It's just because I don't know what to expect from all these guys, and I think without LeBron, I don't know how they formulate together. I guess that's my overarching reason. I guess I don't think they could be good, but at the same time, I like a lot of the guys individually on the team. So who knows?
It's a question that I don't think we can know the answer to yet. Is what this team's identity will be. They're talking about playing faster. They've looked faster when they've had real players in the preseason. And they've run more motion. There's been less just dribbling and attacking. There's been a lot more ball movement. So that is going to be a thing, for better or worse, and I think it is for the better. I would say they need to, I think if I was them, I would be really leaning into this player development business. You know, like I don't think Sam Decker's good. Okay. I think there's like a 10% chance at most that he like has a good year and like becomes like a decent rotation piece for the next like 3 years, right? Like would I hate if they brought him back next year on like a cheap 3-year deal? Probably not, but he needs to like do something. I also understand like why at this point in time they used like a trade exception that was going to expire and got a guy that cost them nothing and they can let walk for nothing in a year, right? Like I understand that. They're a team that like I think they are trying to do this thing where these young guys develop and Sexton hits and they sort of hope maybe he's like a Donovan Mitchell type and that's like the high end, but they want to hope they hit on like a later lotto pick. They hope Osman really thrives. They hope Ante Zizic really thrives. And then there's this player development like lets them like cut the line in terms of drafting really high and getting you know good young players. Like that's I think what they're hoping for, and that's like really a risky hard path. It basically there's like very little room for error there as you sort of prognosticate that out, but I think that's what they're going for, and that's like a weird thing because it's very different from what we've seen. They put really no emphasis on player development the last few seasons when LeBron was around. I mean they had like Kay Felder and like Eddie Tavares and Osman really last year was like the one guy that sort of did develop a little bit. And like you look at down the roster, like they take a guy like Billy Preston, who is a highly rated prospect coming out of high school, has issues at Kansas with the NCAA. He's completely raw and not an NBA player right now, but they're trying to develop that guy too. So they're trying to like take these different routes to getting talented guys in their system and maximizing them. And it's really a test of like what they're capable of in that as an organization. It could not work. Like in a year from now, if they were picking number 3 in the draft and were like going to take Cam Reddish or take RJ Barrett or something, like that wouldn't shock me. Also wouldn't shock me if they're picking a number 8 again and they're, you know, saying like, oh, they're just going to pick the guy that they feel like they can develop in some way. Like I think that to me more than how many games they win, you know, what their counting stats are, what the advanced stats tell us, what we can learn about these young guys is the most important thing about this season. And that's like a weird, I don't know if there's any other success that matters in terms of like Sexton and Osman and these guys taking leaps.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that was always interesting to watch. You know, player development in a case like this where you don't really know is so much more fascinating than, like, I don't know, Orlando, where, like, okay, they have a bunch of young dudes who we kind of know about already. Like, that's boring. I think focusing on their game tonight specifically, I think it's funny that, well, they started two different starting lineups in the first two preseason games. I think it's funny that somehow we still don't know who the Cavs are going to start on opening night. I feel like we basically know, but I've heard talk about them starting two different groups. Who do you think they go with in this game and mostly during the season? Or is that an unfair question?
No, I think it's fair. I think they didn't play a lot of guys on Saturday against Boston. So, like, Kevin Love, Kyle Korver, George Hill, and Tristan all did not play. David Nwaba didn't play either, although he's on the fringe of the rotation right now. I think their starting lineup on opening night, and I'm going to tell you based on who they're playing, which I believe is the Raptors. So there's a caveat to this. So Tyronn Lue has said in the preseason that they're going to play two different centers based on who they're playing. So they play Toronto opening night. That's Wednesday, October 17th. Toronto's probably going to play, just going to start Jonas Valanciunas. That's a bigger, bulkier center. So I think in that matchup, they're going to play, you're going to see Tristan Thompson starting. Right, like Larry Nance did put on some muscle this summer, but they're going to go with Thompson as the starter against those teams that have big fives like Embiid or, you know, Jokic or guys like that. Rudy Gobert. You look at the flip side of it, Larry Nance is going to start against your smaller guys. So if Al Horford starting at the five for Boston, for example, like that would be a guy he would, you know, maybe go up against. Just think it's Clint Capella. I could see them maybe doing that because he just moves a little bit better. Just kind of groups like that. The Cavs, otherwise, I think opening night it's going to be Hill, Hood, Osman, Love, and then Thompson. And I think against Indiana, it's probably the Thompson at the five because I think they'll go with him against Miles Turner. I think they want to have that second bigger, bulkier kind of big out there against Indiana if they're playing two bigs as well. But I think that's the one position. And I don't know what it's an interesting mix because, like, I think they're clearly starting Hill because he's the veteran, but. Like, you know, when does Sexton come in? The things that we don't know is, like, how does Sexton interact with that opening lineup? He hasn't played a minute with Kevin Love yet in the preseason, I don't think. How did these rotations work, I think, is the more complicated question. Because we just don't know. And Ty historically will not tell you what he's going to do until he does it. And then it is like, I forgot that I was going to do that because he just doesn't want to, like, answer those type of questions. That's, like, his move. So I'm curious to see, like, what that looks like. And we just don't, because we have no data points on that yet. And that's sort of the one thing is that if you're a fan or just evaluating this team, I could understand, like, that there's some anxiety in, like, not being able to, like, track some of that yet. And it's been two games, but there's no data yet, as far as we know, beyond who we expect the starting lineup to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions there still. I like that. I like that Tristan will start against the Pacers from an outside perspective, just because I think his rebounding is super valuable against a team that's not very good at rebounding. Can I do one more Cavs question about something that I have no idea about?
You can throw as many back as you want at me.
All right. Is Ty Lue gonna show that he's a good or bad coach this year?
Ooh. I think that hinges on what he does with player development. Because I think he strikes me as a guy, and based on some of his comments, as a guy who, like, wants to do right by his veterans and play his veterans. There's already been some chatter that the organization wants to play younger guys and see what they have in those guys. What does that divide look like, and how does he nurture young guys really being asked to do it for the first time as a head coach? I don't know. I think that will be... I tend to think he's going to be better at it than his track, like the lack of a track record in this would indicate, just because he has never done it before. I think he will turn out to be good. I think he's probably just like a fine NBA coach, but we're going to kind of see what his vision sort of looks like this year and how adaptable he is and sort of what his strengths are outside of LeBron. And I think that's probably a top three Cavs storyline because we just don't know. He's a very expensive coach. They're not going to be in a rush to fire him because they've paid a lot of coaches in the past because they fire them very quickly. Shouts to Mike Brown. Shouts to Byron Scott. Ty is going to – I think the organization trusts him, but I think there is going to be some moments where he has to choose. And I just want – I think what he chooses there will tell us a lot, and the context of that will tell us a lot. And – right now, I think he's going to be going for wins. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's interested in the deep rebuild, and what that leads to, I think, is sort of interesting. And that could be the path that where maybe gets him in trouble a little bit if he leans way too much into the vets.
Yeah, that would you know, it always is tough when they have, like, mandates from ownership too that they don't like going for. But, you know, it is what it is. I think that'll be interesting too. I don't know how I feel about him. I always felt like he was And I think people are too critical of him, but I don't know how good he is, so I don't want to say that it's unfair. So I am going to be fascinated to see how that goes this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to pivot to this game/Pacers talk?
Yeah, let me give you my – here's my Pacers take
okay.
for the year. I expect them to be just as good. I think a lot of that does hinge on Victor Oladipo, kind of sustaining what he did. A slight regression would not really surprise me, but I like the offseason moves they made. I like getting Tyreke Evans. I like the Doug McDermott signing after I kind of like thought about it a little bit, even though that price tag is a little, maybe a tad much. I like this team. I think they probably, though, could end up being like, they're in a position where like I'm picking them to finish. I'm going to say in like the either 4 or 5, just because I think I feel confident in saying Toronto, Boston are both going to be better. I'm like very interested in Milwaukee. I don't know if that roster makes the most sense, but I like Budenholzer and Giannis is just sort of something I like. I'm very like fascinated about, and I think Philly's better than them. So unless they can get past Milwaukee, I think they're probably 5 in the East. Does that mesh with what you're expecting from them? Am I too low on them? Am I too high on them at this point?
No, I'm close to that. I'm pretty high on the Celtics in general. Like, I think they're clearly a tier one, which, I mean, if the Raptors are better, then so be it. Like, I get how that would happen, but that's not my personal opinion. And then Philly, they were close with last year. They were actually better, like, head-to-head. But I think Philly obviously has a bigger chance to take a larger step forward. Actually, a way bigger chance. And then Milwaukee, my thing with them is, like, even if they had the exact same team as last year, they have no internal development. And they have no head coach. They just don't have Jason Kidd anymore. They're probably better. So add in Budenholzer, who's a plus in the win category anyway. And they're going to look better, much better than last year. So I feel like they're around where you said in that 4 or 5 range. Although I think they could, you know, in the best case scenario, they move up to 3 and it's pretty easy. You know, they had 3 rotation guys end up in China, like, and they replaced them with actual NBA players. So I think, you know, addition by subtraction plus addition by addition at the same time there could boost them quite a bit. But yeah, that's the fear that everybody has is like, we all, you know, you said regression with Oladipo and I hear that a lot and I think it's possible and certainly not a thing that I would be surprised by, but at the same time, you know, it's really hard with this Pacers team because everybody like was above what everyone expected of them in terms of shooting or some, or in some aspect, everybody punched above their weight. And it's like, there has to be something to that. So the question is, was it just like very somehow fluky for every single player last year, or are they actually as good as they are and then the fit is just perfect? So I think that that's something we'll have to see as the season goes along.
Looking at this team, I think the big X factor for me is Miles Turner. I feel like if he hits in a big way, this team will get like a lot more interesting in a hurry. What are your expectations for him this year as you know, I mean, is he the second most important player behind Oladipo and is he in line for like the type of season he seems to be capable of?
Yeah. He's the guy he's the guy with the key to them hitting their ceiling. You know, people always are like hipstery when they're like, oh, you always forget Miles Turner in the unicorn discussion. It's like, yeah, I mean, he has those skills, but he's never been, you know, the guy who like the Porzingis Towns, whatever guy who can do it all himself. Like he's always been he's more of a play finisher than an initiator on offense. And that limits where he is in a unicorn status. But if he becomes what he can be, you know, if he develops any semblance of a post game where he can, you know, create for others with a pass or like do a deep spin move and get to the rim, like anything more than what he is now, which is just catching, you know, he's got weak hands and stuff like that. You know, if he improves down there and really is an inside-outside guy, I think that unlocks a lot for this team because it just opens up so many more things that you can do that you couldn't already do. And the troubling thing last year, you know, people expected this jump from him, and then he was playing an entirely new role. Playing with Oladipo is so much different than playing with Paul George. But this year, I think familiarity and a good regimented offseason could really help him. He's just going to – for him, it's not about, like – like he improved his body with yoga and lifting, but I think it's about improving his skills, which I think those things help him do. But he has to find a way to get better at the things he's not good at are really detrimental to him, like being the star that everybody wants him to be. So he needs to find that post game. He needs to be able to defend more than 15 feet out effectively. And I think he can do those things. He just hasn't shown it yet. And if he is, you know, if he's serviceable to good at them this year, then I think, you know, yes, he's the second best player. He will boon them up to you know, however high they can go. But if he doesn't have those, you know, I think they're about limited to the same as last year.
Give me your, let's go back to that two big lineup thing, the post LeBron adjustment thing. Yes. Explain that to me. And are you in on it or no?
So McMillan's justification is he thinks more teams in the East will lean that way with LeBron gone. He said he talked to Ty Lue at some coaching conference-y kind of deal. I don't know what it was. I guess a lot of NBA coaches were there. And he didn't get a ton of info out of him, but Ty Lue was one of the guys talking about it with the Love Thompson kind of deal. And you look around, you've got like in the division specifically, you know, the Bulls probably will run two-ish kind of bigs, even though one of them stretchy. The Pistons will definitely be running two bigs. And the Bucks might at times, but, you know, Giannis is not really a big. He's more of a perimeter guy. So in the division, maybe it's like an actual thing that might happen where teams go more conventionally. But in the conference, I don't think that's the case at all. And I personally am very against it. I think you see the way the NBA is going. And, like, if the whole goal is to be contrarian, then great. Like, trying something new, I'm all for that. But he's saying they're doing it because he thinks other teams are going to do it, which makes it not contrarian and just, you know, like – counter-punching almost, which I don't agree with. But I think that of the teams with personnel, they have, you know, a great, great group of guys to do it. We saw that Turner and Thad can get it done last year. Thaddeus Young, very underrated NBA player. He really impacts the game in multiple areas. He can defend everywhere. He can do everything on offense besides shoot the three effectively, but he finds a way to space the floor in other ways. He's just a really useful guy. So he fits with Sabonis and Turner, which is great. And Sabonis and Turner, which is like, in theory, the key to the future of this team. They're two young guys who can play together. They were not, their net rating together was not good last year, but if you take their net rating without Lance Stephenson and throw it out the window and do it without Lance, it was a positive. So that's a theme for everybody basically. But I think that, you know, that could work. And if it does work, then great. Then their long-term ceiling is now higher because two of their best three or four young players fit together. But I think they're going to try a lot of stuff like that. And Kylo Quinn, you know, they'll try to squeeze him in there. They have a lot of bigs who can play with other bigs. So it could work. And it's not the worst idea ever given their personnel. But I think that the league is not actually shifting that way. And thus I'm against the idea there. But I think that the real reason they're doing it is because it's the best use of the assets they have.
Wrapping up on two questions that I think sort of work together, and I don't think you need like super long answers, but number one, of the offseason moves, what are you expecting to be the one that is most impactful? And number two, what are you actually looking to learn from Monday's preseason game? With the Cavs, I just want to see Colin Sexton play with people that are not like bench players. I want to see him play with Kevin Love. Nothing else really interests me that much. So what for you on Monday are you looking for?
Well, you stole you. I'm gonna take your Colin Sexton comment and just change it to Tyreke Evans. Tyreke Evans played his first game for the Pacers Saturday against the Grizzlies. None of the starters played, and he only played in the first half and the early part of the third quarter. So he looked okay. He was 3 of 11 from the field, but he was fine doing a lot of other things besides scoring. But I think he'll play better when he's playing with starters and more, you know, rotation level players, like you said about Sexton. So I'm really excited to see how that goes. And just to see a semblance of their normal rotation because, you know, they've had injuries to Thad Young and Tyreke in the first preseason game. And then they sat out all the starters last time. So I'm intrigued to see how that goes. And I forget what the other part of your question was.
of the offseason moves.
Oh, yes, yes. I remember.
Yeah, who's the most impactful?
That's enough of that. But I remember it now. So Tyreke is the obvious answer. They really needed a secondary ball handler. Cavs people know all about it. They would throw doubles at Vic, and he had just no answer. And that was the reason. That was like the sinking thing the Pacers had that whole series because they really did well and hit their ceiling in every other area. But Vic getting double just really sunk them. That will take pressure off him. Tyreke can attack with a mismatch. You know, he's a guy you can't really sag off of. I think he's going to help a ton. And McDermott, you know, he's overpaid probably. But I think he really can help the second unit. They had no spacing at all last year. Now they have a ton. His defense is bad. It's not good. But I think the spacing is enough that he'll be – even the spacing alone just makes him a positive for that second unit. So, really, I think they'll both be impactful. But I think Tyreke is clearly going to be the most impactful, especially because there are two other key additions, quote-unquote, Kylo Quinn and Aaron Holiday won't play that much.
Yeah, I think especially because like I don't like love the Pacers point guards, but if you have Oladipo and you get another ball handler, like maybe you don't need like a traditional point guard. That seems to me to be the thinking there. Yep. Like you didn't really need to upgrade on Collison and Kojo, so which is fine. Like I get that, and it's you know hopefully you know, maybe Holiday can develop into something as well. But I just want real basketball. Like, I know the preseason's here, but like, just give me like regular season games, please.
I don't know if any Cavs people saw it. The Pacers tweeted after their game on Saturday against the Grizzlies, tough 109-104 loss. The Pacers fall to 0-0 in the regular season.
The good tweet.
Brilliant Twitter work.
give that Pacers Twitter account manager like a good raise or like some kind of nice gift, because that's good tweeting. That is expert NBA tweeting.
Make people realize that this game didn't matter. That's why the closing lineup was Ben Moore, Omari Johnson, Elijah Stewart, Aaron Holiday, and Kylo Quinn.
Yeah, shouts to Kylo. J.R. Smith and Kylo Quinn in the preseason have both now just played with garbage lineups that I'm not sure why they're playing with. Like, J.R. is playing with, like, Isaiah Taylor and Kobe Simmons. And, like, he's playing with Zizic, but, like, just a bunch of dudes that, like, at least multiple of them will not be on the team in, like, a week. So, like, that's where we are. And that's tough. That's a tough vibe if you're J.R. You're probably just like, J.R., it's the meme of him just, like, looking very confused comes to life on the basketball court after he fought Marcus Smart. A wild Saturday night for one J.R. Smith.
Yeah. J.R. Smith seems to always hit a bajillion threes against the Pacers, so I hope he doesn't play. I got nothing else for you. I'm excited for this game, though. Oh, yeah. I do have one more thing. What is the final score going to be, and why? One sentence.
103-97 Pacers, because I have no idea. Because this game is just gonna like make no sense. But there will be like a lot of points scored because preseason.
This is it. This is the revenge game for the playoffs last year, Chris. So the Pacers are going to win by 20 plus points.
Yeah, they're just super worked, super like amped up about this playoff. I will be there, and if the Q is a playoff environment, it's gonna feel like dead. I think compared to the playoffs when everyone was like nervous and like stressed, and I don't think that'll necessarily be the case now.
Oh man, that'll be fun. I've been to the Q. I like the Q. All right, man. I appreciate you coming on. What's your Twitter so people can
find? You can find me on Twitter at CWMWrites. And tell Locked On Cavs listeners just where they can find everything you're doing.
Yep. I'm at TEastNBA, and I write for a bajillion places, so don't bother keeping up with all of them. I post all my stuff.
Yeah, give them a follow. It'll all be good.
It is good. Thank you all for tuning in. We hope to do more Locked On crossovers as the year goes on with both Chris and the rest of the network. But this one will be fun. Cavs Pacers. It's a little playoff fun stuff. I know a lot of you guys will be tuning in because this is the first Pacers game that doesn't overlap with Notre Dame football or Colts football. So get ready for that. Thank you all for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll catch y'all tomorrow.